This conversation between Ted Savage and Walter Langford is being taped in Ted's office at Harris Stowe College in St. Louis on July 22, 1987. Ted, where's Venice, Illinois? Southern Illinois?
No, Venice is right across the river.
Oh.
If you went across the McKinley Bridge, as soon as you come down off the bridge, that's it.
I'll be darned. Mm-hmm. So this is your bailiwick.
Right.
Tell me how you got started in baseball.
Well, I guess it's the usual story. I played baseball all my life. I started out playing in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Then my parents moved to East St. Louis. That's where I went to finish my grade school and my high school. And naturally, I played baseball in high school.
Sure.
And from there, I guess I went to college at the Lincoln University of Grand City, Missouri. We did not have a baseball team.
In college, Lincoln.
Yes, then I went to college where I did not play baseball. And
why?
They didn't have a baseball team.
Pretty good reason.
Actually, I signed to play professional baseball after I went into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And I had spent 4 years in college and 2 years in the service, and then mm-hmm. I signed out of the service to play baseball.
Yeah.
And so that meant that 4 years I didn't play baseball while I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And Philadelphia came along and offered me a modest bonus, and I signed right outside of as soon as I got out of the service.
Yeah. Where did you go in the minors?
First stop was Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Then Buffalo, and then Philadelphia.
And they were Philadelphia farm teams.
Right.
So you, what average did you hit in Buffalo?
I think it was around 320 something, 325, 326 something in there.
Mm-hmm.
In Buffalo, that's where I led the league in six departments that year.
And, gee, where were they?
Oh wow.
Some of them anyway.
Well, I led the league in stolen bases, I know. I led the league in total bases. I led the league in runs scored. And I led the league in batting average.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe doubles and triples. And I think as a leadoff man, I hit 20-something home runs.
Well, that was a mighty good cause for the Phillies. Looking forward to having you up there with them.
Yes, I thought I had a good shot, but I think John Quinn was a general manager then.
Could have been. Malk was the manager.
Yeah, Malk was the manager. Yeah. And I guess Mr. Quinn and I didn't get along that well because in A-ball, he had promised me that I would get a raise if I had a good year.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit, in 280-something in A-ball my first year, and I called him and asked him for a modest raise. And he would not give it to me. And he told me that if I made the team, the AAA team, that I would get a raise. And I made the team, and I called him again and asked him for some more money, and he wouldn't give it to me.
Hmm.
And then he told me if I was doing well by the middle of that year with Buffalo, that I would get a raise. And by the middle of Buffalo, I was in about 340.
Sure.
And I didn't get it. And so he said if I finished up well, I would get a raise, and that he would call me to the big league. You know, after the minor league season was over, he would call me up.
Yeah.
And like I said, I wound up leading the league in six departments. And I called him and asked him for a modest raise again. He said no. And then he didn't call me up either. And I remember it was in the wintertime, he called and asked me why wouldn't I sign my contract. And I told him that it's because he had made me some promises. And so we argued and bickered back and forth. And so eventually I got a good contract. But apparently he didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know my first year with Philly, I was leading. I was third in hitting in June.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark came to me and put me on the bench and said I looked tired. And I just played against left-handers from then on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up hitting about 279.
Yeah, you had a pretty good year, 266. Yeah.
266.
Yeah.
And then they traded me the next year to
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. where he went over there with Pancho Herrera for Don Hoke and found Danny Murtaugh. How was he?
I think Danny was one of the best Ferris managers I've ever played for.
Everybody tells me that, Chuck.
Danny was one heck of a guy.
What are some of the teammates you found there at Pittsburgh?
Oh, at Pittsburgh, everybody was there in those days, like Roberto Pena, not Roberto Pena, but
Clemente.
Roberto Clemente. I think Bill Burton was there too.
Very likely.
Al McBean, Bob Beal, Bailey was playing third base. I think Skinner was even still there at the time. And just a beautiful bunch of guys, and we had a good time.
Yeah, Mazeroski was still there.
Yeah, Bill Mazeroski was there.
Burton was. Stargell was there.
Stargell.
Yeah.
He was just coming up.
Yeah, he didn't... Bob Friend was...
Pitching, yeah.
Pitching.
Law.
Al McBean had a good year, about his only good year somehow.
That year with, I remember that year with very well because at when Philly traded me, I went to Puerto Rico to play that winter, and I had a good year down there. But in the process of having that good year, I contracted or contacted a, what was the disease I had, sickness, illness, it was called undulant fever.
Oh yeah.
And it came from drinking unpasteurized milk.
Yeah.
And it didn't really get me down until around the second month of the season. And I was just tremendously sick. I lost about 35 or 40 pounds. So finally they put me in the hospital and they didn't know what I had. I stayed in the hospital a long time. They didn't know what I had. The outlook was very bleak at the time, and the reason they said it took so long to find out what I had was because they hadn't had a case of undulant fever, which comes from drinking unpasteurized milk in the States for such a long time. And so by the time I got my strength back, the season was over.
Sure.
You know, and I didn't have a good year there at all.
Now in 64 you came over here to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I came to the Cardinals. I think I had went back to the minor league.
Well, yeah, there was 64 was a year off. You went back to the minors with whom?
I guess that was Tulsa. I think that was Tulsa.
I don't have that.
And I had a good year with Tulsa, and I got called up by the Cardinals. And you know, just played sparingly part time. And then they got rid of me that next year also. Got traded quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that happens to a lot of people. Then that's when you went to the Cubs.
Right. The great Leo DeRosa.
I was going to say, how was Leo?
Leo and I didn't get along at all.
Leo and a lot of people didn't get along.
I don't know why we didn't get along, but... we just didn't hit it off, and I played quite a bit for the Cubs. I think my best performance was pinch hitting. When I look back on that year with Leo, it was a year that was total confusion as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
And it seemed as though everything I did for Leo was wrong, and nothing I could do right. And so it was just a bad experience altogether.
You stayed in Chicago the part of the next season. Started there, but after a few games you went to the Dodgers.
Yeah, they traded me to the Dodgers.
And Alston was probably the reverse of DeRosa.
Right, completely the opposite. One of the greatest managers that has ever put on a uniform as far as I'm concerned. Quiet, soft-spoken, let you do your job. He told me when I first got there that I wasn't going to play that much, but to look forward to playing that next season. And at the time, that's when they got Al Campanis came in as general manager, and And from all indications, I guess he had his own ideas of who he wanted.
Yeah.
And I wasn't...
You weren't among them.
I wasn't in the scheme of things, and so he told me that he was going to trade me also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you went to Cincinnati, and Dave Bristol was your...
Dave Bristol, who I thought was one heck of a manager, he gave me a chance to play.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play much in Cincinnati, but that eventually worked out for me because he went over to manage Milwaukee and
got you over there.
And that got me over there. But at Cincinnati, that's when I ran into Pete Rose, Jim Maloney, Tommy Helm, those guys.
Yeah, and, you had some great teammates there.
I had some super teammates there. Lee May.
Right.
Tony Perez
was playing third base. Huh?
Right. So that was one.
And Bobby Tolan.
Bobby Tolan. That was one team that was just beginning.
It was coming up.
Yeah.
Yep. Johnny Bench.
Right. And they got rid of the manager, and the next year they became the Big Red Machine.
Yep.
And I think they went on and won it that year too.
And 70. They won the West Division and played Baltimore in the World Series, yep. All right, now, when you went over to Milwaukee, you found Bristol again.
I found Bristol, and Bristol gave me a chance to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a pretty good year for Bristol. I think I hit, 279?
Yeah. 279.
Mm-hmm. Once again, I ran into a general manager that I'm not going to say didn't like me because I don't think that was the case. But I ran into Frank Schrader Lane, that was his name,
Frank Lane.
And I never forget, I saw him in the airport the first day I got there, and he said, you know, I remembered you playing basketball. And he said, I wanted to get you then. I didn't know him then. I didn't know he had anything to do with basketball. He said, I wanted to get you then.
He was a referee, famous referee.
Right. He said, I wanted to get you then. And I liked your style, he said, but I always wanted to trade for you. And he said, I always wanted to trade you. And I said, yeah. And that next year, he commenced to cleaning out that whole ball club. Although I had a good year, and I thought I would have a good chance to stick with him and to play that next year. But he had other ideas. He cleaned out that whole ball club, and they traded me to Kansas City, which was the last team.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a unique story also because I went over there and I was going to play there. And I finally got Lemon, who was the manager, to give me a chance to play. I went in his office asking for a chance to play. And I went out and Vita Blue was pitching. I think I got two hits off Vita Blue that night.
Mm-hmm.
Hit a home run and a single. And about the fifth inning, I broke my finger.
You're kidding.
And so they told me to hurry up and get well, that I was going to play, and as soon as I broke my finger, got well, they told me to go down to the minor leagues, that they were going to call me back. And I didn't want to go, and I balked on it for about a week, and finally I decided to go. Mm-hmm. And I went to Omaha, and one Saturday they called me and told me that to come on back to the big leagues. And 2 hours later they called and changed their mind and said that, that they didn't know that I had used up all my options.
Uh-huh.
And that I would have to sit out the rest of the season. And in fact, they were going to release me. And I had asked for a release right after my finger got well, and they wouldn't do it because there was a couple of ball clubs I could have signed with. But they would give it to me. They told me to go to minor league, so I did. And then they called me back and told me that long, big lie. But they didn't know that my options had been used when they sent me out. And that I couldn't come back to the big leagues. So they went on, they released me. And that's when I decided to give it up.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Philadelphia for a moment. That first year, aside from the differences with Quinn, do you have any notions as to why you didn't quite live up to their expectations. You didn't do bad, but...
I think the reason I didn't was because I didn't play.
Didn't play enough,
you know. I think that, like I said, I know in June I was hitting, I was third in the league in hitting. I didn't play, I can only assume that the word came down from upstairs not to play me. I was leading the team at that time in all departments around June. I was stealing bases, I was hitting the ball well, I was playing good outfield. And then he started platooning me with Wes Covington, Tony Gonzalez, and somebody else in the outfield. And for no reason, because I remember we went on the big swing out on the West Coast, and I was hitting against all the top pitchers like Drysdale and Koufax and Marshall and so forth.
Yeah.
And I held my own. I got back. I was, like I said, I was hitting way over 300. And Gene told me one day doing a doubleheader that he was going to rest me. And he did. He gave me a rest one of the games, and I didn't play. I played against left-handers the rest of the season.
Yeah, Callison was a fixture.
Right.
Out there, and
Gonzalez.
Gonzalez played a little more than well, and didn't get in as many games as you did.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he was platooning me, Gonzalez, and Wes Covington.
I can see that in the figures. Each of you got in about the same number of games.
Mm-hmm. I think he played this other fella called Kenny Walters. I think he played a little bit too. Kenny was toward the end of his career.
Yeah, they don't list him here.
Maybe it was Del Greco, I don't know.
Well, the only other outfielder they show here is Jackie Davis.
Yeah, Jackie
Davis. Got in a few games.
Mm-hmm.
And Covington, Savage, Gonzalez, and Callison.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they have people that they don't list here. That... Anyway, did you feel sorry about leaving Philadelphia?
Yes, you know, you always feel sorry about getting traded, I think, when you're that young, and that was my first team. And, and although I wound up hitting 266, I was sure that I could do better, and I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get a chance to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was disappointed that I didn't get along well with the general manager. Gene Mock and I got along pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
No problem there, but I was surprised that I got traded. It really surprised me.
Yeah, I bet. Don Demeter played some outfield too.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
Don
Demeter. He was mostly at third base, but played
outfield also.
How was Roy Sievers?
He played a little bit.
He played first base. He played a few games in the outfield, but he was mostly first base.
Roy did all right, I guess. I don't remember how he did. In fact, I saw Roy the other day.
I was going to say, he lives here in St. Louis.
Right, I saw him the other day. I started this year, I started a baseball camp.
I know, I want to talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah. Tony Taylor was at second base.
Right.
And
Ruben Amaro was at short.
It's got Bobby Wine.
Okay, Bobby Wine.
Short. Yeah.
Was Ruben there also?
No, he's not listed.
He should have been there. He played the short too. Ruben played a lot of short. Pancho Herrera.
Pancho Herrera. Demeter was the main RBI man that year. He had 107. But Callison and Gonzalez, Sievers all had 80 or more. You stole 16 bases. Had 7 home runs. 39 RBIs. That wasn't bad first season.
No, I thought it was a good... yeah, like I said, I wish I could have played more because I think that that year kind of set the tone for me for the rest of my little career that I had. I didn't play much with anybody until I got to Milwaukee.
That's right.
And then I had another pretty good year.
You did indeed.
And that was
it. Which shows what you're saying is true, that all you needed was more activity, and boy, there are lots of reserves that say that. They get the chance, and Candy Maldonado proved it last year when they finally they got to a place where they played. What about the pitchers on that Philadelphia team?
Good boy.
Art Mahaffey.
One heck of a pitcher.
Yeah, he won 19. And old Cal McLish.
Yeah.
Jack Balchin.
Balchin was a good pitcher. He was a good pitcher.
Yeah, I guess Chris Short was probably just starting.
Right. Yeah. Chris was just starting and beginning to come around.
And of all things, Dallas Green was there.
Dallas Green. Managing in Chicago, a good manager in Chicago.
Yeah.
They had a pretty good pitching staff. We didn't win very many ball games. But
well, you were, you were one game over 500.
Right.
81-80. And that was leading up to 64 when they should have won it and blew it. All right, now, after you left the majors, when you decided that it just wasn't worth the hassle.
I went to Mexico for 2 years.
Did you really?
Yeah,
about?
I went down and played in Guadalajara.
Oh, great city.
I had 2 good years down there. At the same time, I was hoping that I got called back to the big league, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I decided to just give it up and come back.
And I spent a lot of my life in Mexico.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was a Latin American specialist at Notre Dame, and Spanish and Portuguese were my languages, and traveled over every inch of Mexico starting in 1933.
Well, things must have been rough down there,
In a way, it was better than later. It's gotten, somewhat like our country. I mean, crime and congestion and pollution and everything.
I didn't think there was much crime in Mexico.
Pretty much. It's more small crime.
Yeah.
But anyway, Guadalajara was then a delightful city in the early 30s and 40s, and still is, as far as I'm concerned. Mexico City has gotten too big, too congested, too polluted, and you just can't get around.
Well, when I was there, I enjoyed Guadalajara.
Yeah.
Like I said, the city itself was very nice, it was clean.
Mm-hmm.
Still, at that time, still on the quiet side, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But being away from home and married, and the kids growing up, I was getting up in age too, and I just said, "Hey, stop working."
That's one of the hardest parts of being a big league ball player or a baseball professional ball player. All of them tell me is that absence from home and the family and the wives are the unsung heroes.
Yeah. I had one opportunity to go to Japan.
Really?
In Milwaukee. The manager from over there asked Bristol would he talk to me and let me go to, he talked to me about a contract going to Japan. And I told Bristol no.
No.
Well, I figured I had just had a good year with Milwaukee,
and
I knew I had a good shot to make the team the next year.
Yeah.
And I was quite surprised when they said, hey, that's it, we're going to go to Kansas City.
All right, so you turned to other things.
Right, when I retired, I had already had my BS degree in physical education and minor in biology. I decided to go back to school, and I got my master's.
About
Southern Illinois and then I decided to keep going and got my doctorate from St. Louis University here in St.
Great.
Louis.
Great.
And that's when I got back into education and that's what I've been doing ever since.
What was your doctorate in?
My doctorate was in urban education.
Great.
Philosophy of urban education.
And then from there you came right here to Harrisville?
No, from there I was the admissions director and registrar at a college, a small college in East St. Louis, mm-hmm. State Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there I came over here.
Mm-hmm. So you've been here how many years now?
9 years. I was assistant principal in the school system first, and then this job came up and I applied for it and I got it, so I've been here for now 8 years.
What's your title?
Director of athletics.
Yeah. How many sports do you have?
We have, I call them six. We got baseball for men, soccer for men, and basketball for men, basketball women, volleyball women, and track for women.
Good.
So we have six sports.
Yeah. What's the enrollment here?
The enrollment is around 1,300.
What's the division between men and women?
It's more women than men.
Is it?
Like we might have 800 women, 500 men,
mm-hmm.
or it could be better, more than that. This is strictly a teacher education institution.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we get two degrees, but the main degree is teaching.
Yeah.
And that makes it a little bit hard for me to recruit athletes, because a lot of kids days don't want to be teachers. They got these big ideas, they're going to be doctors, lawyers, and
mm-hmm.
what have you, engineers and all that kind of stuff, and
we don't prepare them for that.
No.
Yeah.
We don't get
that. Tell me now about your baseball clinics. When did you start them?
Last winter I was sitting down thinking that I had talked to a lot of the old timers. Every now and then we have an old timer meeting or something.
Yeah.
Game and I go, and a lot of the guys said that they would like to get back and doing something involving baseball, and I thought about it all winter, and I said, well, I told them let's try a clinic. And so I began thinking about it and trying to put it together, and we had our first clinic 2 weeks ago Saturday in Belleville, Illinois, and we drew about 110-15 kids.
Good.
And the guys that were in that clinic were Roy Sievers, Frank Bauman, Gagliano, and Bunchak, a fellow by the name of Don Kutze, and a couple other guys.
Mentions in the paper, Kurt Ford and Tom Lawless.
Yeah, they came over at
Rybalski. The mad Hungarian came.
Right, they came over to help us out.
Yeah.
And then we went down to Little Rock, Arkansas. We done one down there, and then we went over to Memphis and done one in Memphis.
Great.
And now we got about three more left to do, and hopefully that by us just getting started next year, we won't make a lot of mistakes that we're making this time,
mm-hmm.
and we're gonna try to have one like every other week somewhere in the area or
Great.
Close around.
Great.
So it should work out pretty good.
Well, it sounds wonderful to me, and it's. It's a contribution to the sport and to the whole area.
I was surprised that a lot of the kids still remember, you know, some
mm-hmm.
of us.
Mm-hmm.
I know the parents remember.
Yeah.
We try to make our camp a little bit unique in that we allow the parents to come down on the field and talk with us while we're instructing and to take part in the camp. If they, it's like a lot of them got a kick out of wanting to bat against Al Rybalski. You know?
Sure.
And they got up there and he just blew it right past them, but they really enjoyed it. They really
yeah.
enjoyed it.
He's a character.
Oh, yes, he is. A very nice fellow.
Yeah. Does he live right? I didn't realize he lived right around here.
Well, you know, he does the broadcasting some for the Cardinals.
I knew he had done some.
So
yeah.
He's here.
Yeah. That's good. You're going to try to have one every other week or so.
Started next week.
Moving it around to...
Right. We figure that a lot of the small cities don't get a chance to really meet and socialize and talk with pro athletes.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the superstars, they are always getting this exposure.
Sure.
But the so-called non-superstar, the good ball player, the average ball player, people remember those guys too. And for them to be able to sit down and talk with them,
yep.
and laugh and joke with them, and at the same time we help their kids or teach their kids some of the things that we learned in baseball can only help.
Absolutely.
They enjoy it, and we enjoy it.
And the real baseball fan remembers all ball players. They don't remember just the big shots.
Right.
What do the letters STAR stand for?
Star Resources, that's just star.
Yeah, okay. you're going to have one in St. Louis itself?
We're thinking about it.
The small towns are great,
right.
But...
we're thinking about it. We're going to try to get Busch Stadium and one time next year and just see how it goes.
I would think that Busch would jump at that chance.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, they have so many things going on in the ballparks these days.
That's right.
But
they don't have anything to do with baseball.
Right. And some of it. Randy Hunter brings his camp in here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I heard radio this morning he's going to have two camps a week.
Mm.
One last July and first 2 days in August, and then he's coming back with one on the 14th, uh-huh. 15th, and 16th, I think, or 16th, 17th, 18th of August. So they do have some things in there involved in baseball. And then they have, I know they have a circus down there. And,
they bring in all kinds of
things. And there was football, and so it could be used a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And I don't know whether they want it to be used a lot more, but use it.
Yours wouldn't tear it up as much as something like a circus and a lot of the other things they have.
Right.
Mickey Owen runs one, or did run one, down around the Raleigh area, too.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that.
Yeah. Have you ever been to anybody else's camps before you put yours on?
No more than Randy Hunter's fantasy camps.
Yeah, of course, that's a little different. But
that's a little different, but basically the same.
That's right.
It's basically the same.
Yeah. All right. Great. And I think you got a hold of something there that will grow.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. What are the best memories out of your career? You got any special moments or highlights?
I would say that the one thing was coming to play for St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
Growing up right across the river and coming to the ballpark and saying to yourself one of these days, I wish I could play Major League Ball for the St. Louis Cardinals home team,
mm-hmm.
and to fulfill that dream was one accomplishment. I think it's great. And to me, just getting to the big leagues was great. Another thing is I got a chance to meet, talk, and be with Jackie Robinson. He was my favorite ball player.
Natural.
He came here for something. I think it was something that had to do with politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to meet him. I rode with him all that day and talked to him and found out a lot of things a lot of ideas that he had about sports and just life in general. And I always tried to pattern myself after him.
Good.
So when I got a chance to meet him, that was great.
You've got a certain physical resemblance facially to Jackie.
I've never heard that before.
Well, I think you do. I never saw him in person, but the photos give me the notion that you weren't too far.
I was talking with some of the guys the other day when we were down in Memphis, some of the old timers, and they tell me, I just thought of this ball player's name, Sullivan. He was a big, tall, 6'7", 8" pitcher. You remember him? He pitched with Philadelphia then, I think.
Older than you or younger?
Well, about maybe a little bit older. Frank Sullivan, tall.
Yeah, Frank Sullivan, I remember.
Right. Well, they were telling me that he's in Hawaii at a golf pro over there. And I just got a kick out of some of those names that they throw back that you just forgotten, and it all came
back.
Well,
that's right. Mike Sullivan played 53-60 with the Boston Americans, 61-62 with Philadelphia.
Right, he was there when I was there.
And then went over to Minnesota. Yeah, he wound up winning 87, losing 100, so he was pretty close to a .500 pitcher anyway. Any really amusing incidents or anecdotes from any of your teammates that you can think of?
I remember I can't remember anything offhand. I had so much fun, now that I look back over it.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much fun then, because it seemed as though by my getting traded, I was always trying to make a ball club and stay with the ball club.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I look back over it, my getting traded to all those clubs gave me a chance to meet a hell of a lot of guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I will treasure that for the rest of my life.
Naturally.
Yeah, just been able to say I played with Pete Rose or Hank Aaron, you know, meeting Hank and Bob Gibson and Brock. And just about every team that I played for had a star, a superstar on it. And just being able to be with those guys, just being able to be in the big leagues and to travel and to meet people. I will always treasure that.
Yeah, I can believe it. I don't blame you. Did you notice any difference between the National League and the American League in any sense when you were going back and forth there? Strike zone, the umpires?
No, I thought it was about the same. I think the National League was, since it had been around longer, I don't think the teams in depth could compare with the National League overall, the American League. But it was about even.
Yeah.
But what I noticed today, very strong in my mind and strong in other guys' minds, is that the knockdown pitch has been taken away. And I think the guys in our day could have added maybe another 5 to 10 points on their batting average. They have to worry about being knocked down.
Yep.
As you know, in those days, when I was playing, if the first three or four guys got a hit, the fifth guy was going down automatic.
Sure.
It was automatic.
Yep.
And, now these guys, if you come inside, they the umpires warn them and
throw them out
and all this kind of stuff. And you see guys digging in. Like I see guys last night, I was watching this guy from Minnesota, Puckett.
Yep.
He called timeout and
dug his hole,
and he said okay, and put his other foot down. I said, now in my day, you do that kind of stuff. Drives
there, hit you on the next pitch.
It will drop you so fast, you know.
Yeah.
But, so I think the guys could add another 5 or 6 points onto the average. I think the AstroTurf add another 5 or 6 points.
Yeah, at least.
Right. So I think guys that was like me, hit 230 for over my lifetime, could have hit 260, 210.
Yeah.
You know, very easy. You know, and then the money that these guys make today, it amazes me. You know,
amazes everybody.
Just amazes me.
It's got to amaze a bunch of them, even. Especially reserve sitting on the bench most of the time, making 300,000, 400,000.
I had to fight like the devil to get a $2,000 raise. I wasn't making but 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys. It's almost automatic.
Yeah,
$100,000. Now, let's look at what's the basic salary now? $60,000.
Basically, the minimum is $60,000.
Yeah, I can live off that.
When you came in, they had batting helmets, didn't they?
No,
not when you first came in.
We were wearing those inserts.
Yeah.
This little insert. Then later on, I guess around 64, 65, they
started. Well, I'm amazed talking to old-timers, real old-timers. They didn't have any batting helmets or anything, and those knockdown pitches were just about every other pitch.
Right.
Let me give you I got a book that's going to come out next week about real old-timers. Keep that. You'll see there. Charlie Grimm and Carl Hubbell and Terry Moore and all kinds of guys, and this is the publishing house that does it. They're mostly baseball books, so keep those things for you. And all of them have talked to me about knockdown pitches.
it was a much bigger part of the sport. Of course, it takes some of the danger out, but even in those days with all the knockdown pitches and no helmets.
Come here a minute. Can you turn it off for a second?
Yeah. Tell me, what sports do you coach here? Baseball and what else?
I don't coach.
Don't you?
No.
This is full-time work right here.
Right.
Organizing and managing, directing.
Putting it together, hiring coaches, directing athletics.
You did say that you got baseball as one of the
sports.
Yeah.
I go out and help the kids out. I got a coach, his name is Don Cookson, who played in the Cardinal organization.
Yeah.
He got his highest AAA, and he does my coaching for me.
Mm-hmm. You haven't come up with any, since, maybe you haven't, in that clinic, but you haven't got any photos yet of the activities during the actual clinic. Anybody come out and take photos?
Oh, yeah, all the newspapers come out, and then we take pictures ourselves. We also did tapes. I got tapes in here on my desk drawer.
Yeah, good.
That we're going to make copies, and the kids that want them, we're going to send them to them.
Was there somebody there from Post Dispatch?
Yeah.
All right, I was thinking of this. I'll do a piece for this guy at Philadelphia Phillies. And then I'm thinking of the possibility of another one for local consumption. Maybe it would appeal to St. Louis Magazine, you know, that magazine.
Okay.
And there I would like some photos, but let me ask. I'm real close to Bob Brigg.
Uh-huh.
And if the Post-Dispatch has got some, he can get them for me.
Okay, well...
But if not, I'll call you up and see if you can...
Maybe this will help you out. I got a couple of these.
Yeah, even that. Yeah, good. That's good. Kurt Ford looks like he might make it pretty good here.
Oh, boy, he looks good.
Yeah. In fact, the whole team's looking pretty good.
Here's another one.
Good. All right. All right, thank you. And your overall feelings about baseball are that it was, even though you didn't do what you wanted to because you don't think you had the full chance,
I would trade those experiences
for nothing in the world.
That's the way, that's what I thought.
I'm not bitter at all.
And
I think I had an ample chance, even though I think, you know, everybody wants to play.
Sure.
Every day, all day.
That's what it's all about.
But at the same time, I had the opportunity, and a few times, I guess, it just slipped through my fingers. Because a lot of times you can't do what you want to do when you want to do it.
That's so true. And, with everybody and everything.
Right. But if you got a guy like I hear all this talk about how long Leo Roach is stuck with Willie Mays, you know, so here, this is your job, that's it. You know, and, like, he went 0 for something, maybe 25 or 30, but he got his first base hit, and then he got better. I wish more managers had given me that type
same
of leeway.
That's right.
But it didn't happen. I'm not bitter. I appreciate what the chance that they gave me and the Lord too, you know.
Mm-hmm. All of the older players tell me that they had so much more fun than the present day players seem to have. They were more together, and they weren't worried about the big bucks and all the business ventures they were into because they didn't have any big bucks.
Well, I would imagine that could be true. Like I say, I don't talk to the younger players that much, so I wouldn't know. But I do know that the camaraderie that we had was super.
That's right.
Everybody was pulling for everybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody loved everybody else.
Yeah.
You can see.
see that this is a busy office.
Oh, yeah.
This is light. These kids running here all the time.
That's wonderful. If they weren't, you'd have to worry.
Then, yeah. I'd have to worry.
What do you think about free agency?
I think it's good. I really think that it should have been in sooner.
Yeah.
I think that one club should not have a monopoly on ball players like they did not in my day.
Right.
I think there should be an opportunity at some time in his career that that he can say, hey, I want to try another team. Because just think about how many guys got buried in the minor leagues because of this free agency.
Absolutely.
I tell you what I wish that in some way, fashion, shape, or form, something could be done with Kurt Flood.
Yeah.
Because we know,
what
I think everybody knows that how much is owed to him.
That's right.
And what a tremendous threat, money-wise, that he took when he started fighting this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had the ability, the connections to get together and do something for Kurt. Not that he's suffering or hurting.
No, but even
but,
so.
Even so, he was the catalyst.
Absolutely.
And he did a lot. Now we give him $100 a piece or $500 a piece or whatever.
Right.
Just to say thank you, but I know it never happened. It's only guy got so much money now that they don't want to get his money to the old timers before his pension goes.
That's right. That's right.
I know they're not going to do it. But I bet you if you would poll each individual ball player by himself, he would say yes. But it seems to be something that I guess if they get together as a team, they just say no when it comes to money. And they can't use it.
Right,
you know. So
right.
I wish they would
use all of it. That's for sure. You like the artificial surface, huh?
Yes. You know,
overall.
From the standpoint that I think it makes the game more exciting. Because you're going to have more base hits. And this is from the fan standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, it makes the game more exciting. You're going to have more base hits. You don't have to worry about rainouts and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you have to worry about rainouts, but not as much.
Uh-huh.
I think I would like to have played on it on a regular basis. Now, we had few when I was playing.
Yeah, you get the true bounce and you don't get rainouts.
Right.
The owners benefit more even than the fans, I think. But it's something.
Right.
What do you think about the designated hitter?
It makes the game more exciting.
Yeah.
But I really think for strategic purposes, for managing purposes, I'd like to see that pitcher up there. You know he's
got... That's the exact answer, I think, Ted. Whitey Herzog wouldn't be known as such a great manager if he had to use the DH all the time, although I think he favors the DH. I believe he's...
Well, I think if they're going to do it in one league, they should do it in both.
Well, that's right. It should be one or the other.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that pretty well covers it, I think. The minors don't compare with the minors of the old days, but the colleges are much more important than the colleges were in the old days, too.
We had a left-handed pitcher in those days. I was talking about another day, and I wish I could think of his name.
In the majors?
Yeah, he pitched in the majors. He was going to be a superstar. He was going to be one, and he hurt his arm.
Yeah, that happens to a lot of them.
I can't think of his name now, and I was wondering if it was in that book.
Oh, he'd be here. But there are a lot of them like that. Carl Spooner is one who ruined his arm after one season.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Johnny Beasley ruined his arm in the service after having a 20-game season in his rookie year.
Well, this guy and I roomed together when we were in, we went to winter ball together that year in Arecibo.
Uh-huh.
Also, Al Whitmore was a pitching coach, and Al was down there too.
Huh.
And I can't think of his name. But
that's too bad. Yeah, he'd be in here. Everybody's in here. And in the big, official encyclopedia too.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes at it from a different angle.
Another guy that was supposed to be great was Cup. I remember him. Remember Cup? His last name was Cup?
Ray or Roy?
Ray Cup or something
Ray.
Like that.
Yeah.
Because I know he was supposed to be a superstar. And he was a young kid, and they brought him up to the major. He did all right his first year. Then he hurt his arm, and he wasn't too active then. I think they traded him, finally traded him. He went somewhere and pitched maybe another year, and he quit.
Yeah, he didn't have too many years. I remember that. Well, he must have come up after 60. Ray Culp, 63-66 with the Phillies, 67 with the Cubs, 68-73 with the Boston Red Sox.
Well, he got a few years.
He got a few years, yeah.
Dennis Bennett, that was that guy's name.
Dennis Bennett?
Dennis Bennett.
Let's see if I got him here. I've got Dennis Bennett, 62-65 with the Phillies, 65-67 with the Red Sox, 67 with the Mets, and 68 with the Angels. They had a total career of 43-47. Left hand is 6'3". Yeah.
I wish I knew what he was doing. I'd like to look up some of those guys. I have probably got there where they are.
Well, I should have brought another book. I've got a book that a guy puts out in Ames, Iowa, primarily for people, you know, that collect baseball cards and baseball autographs. And he's got a book of addresses for every player who's played in the major leagues who still lives. In fact, he's got all of them, and he tells the date and the place where they died, if they died. Naturally, people move so much that there'd be a lot of them that are not the same place that he says they are after just a few months, but it gets updated every two or three years, and it's been remarkably helpful to me in finding old ball players.
Do you live in the city?
I live here in Creve Coeur now. Well, actually, West County. It's my post office. My mail address is Creve Coeur, but we're at Olive and Woods Mill Road, and we've only been here a year. After I retired at Notre Dame in '74, I had a job waiting for me running a private foundation in the Dominican Republic. So I was over there for 3 years, and when I came back, my wife and I decided we'd had enough South Bend, Indiana winters, because, boy, they're brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And we said we're going where it's warm. We went to California. A year in the Bay Area, and it wasn't quite as pleasant as we wanted, so we wound up in San Diego, which got, I think, the best climate anywhere you can find.
Oh, that's right.
So we lived there for 6 years or so, and I became very close to the Padres, and always I was going to do a team history of them, but we moved away and that went down the drain. But I did turn out two Padre fans' calendars.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoyed doing that, and knew all of the people in the front office, people on the field too. But my wife and I are in our second marriage. We both lost our spouses by strokes, and We're married 9 years now, and between us we got 7 children, and 6 of them are in the Midwest and East. We're spending all our time, especially money we don't have, flying over here and renting cars and running around and seeing the kids. And of course they had jobs and young children and were too busy to come see us much, so we said we got to get back closer to them, and we chose St. Louis as a good central spot, but it isn't as cold as South Bend. We've liked it here very much, but we're still fairly new around St. Louis. Yeah. I got to tell Whitey someday that he's going to have to pay me not to come to the Cardinals games. I haven't seen him win a game yet. So you can see that I'm choosing spots because they win most of the time, but yeah, not when I'm there, darn it.
They've done one heck of a job this year.
They sure have. They've got to fall flat on their face to...
You think so?
I say they got to lose it now, and I don't think they're going to. Because if Tudor comes back at anything like he is regularly, and if Cox recovers, they've got the everything they need, with the year Clark's having especially. He's having a career year. That's what it takes, is a few guys having a career year to put you over the top. If you'll let me, I'm going to shoot you in a non-violent way.
Okay.
I've got to get out of the light of that window. Here we go.
That's it?
No, didn't do it.
That thing popped up.
Yeah, it came up and I didn't wait for it. Now we're going to cook again. I'll give you a signal. Okay, let's try it now.
There we go.
We got it.